Kia ora mai tātou. Tautoko au ngā mihi kua mihia, mai inanahi rā taino ki tēnei wā, a kāti ki reira. No reire te whare, tēnā koutou katoa. After Margaret's introduction, maybe I should have been introducing her, because my speech, I think, is probably shorter than her introduction. Firstly, I am not Joe Williams. I'm a lot slimmer. I sing better. Joe's not here, so I can say what I want to say. But Joe does send his apologies. Joe has worked in this area for so long, and part of that is evidenced in his Y262 report, where he made a number of statements about the balancing of the constitutional arrangements, balancing of the nation. I did ask Joe whether he had a speech or notes that I could borrow, but he said he wanted to deliver a fresh, up-to-date, and the most current speech he could. In other words, he was waiting till he got here to write it. But like all opportunities, good or bad, we must make the most of what we have. I did also want to make a note. Ma Matunuku may have gone, but Matunuku said earlier that he wished that somebody would quote him. You need to be careful on what you wish for. I am quoted frequently, normally in the appeal court, where my decisions are being ripped to pieces and I'm being quoted by claimants extensively. Also, Professor Linda Tuhiwai-Smith spoke of the gesture of love her father was given when he was sent to boarding school. As you know, I also went to boarding school, but I don't remember feeling the same sort of love when I was sent away. This is a significant time and an important time. An important time for our Māori future, for our Māori futures. The futures of our children, the futures of our grandchildren. It is a time to reflect on the past, to celebrate the wins, and there are many, but also to mourn the losses. But more importantly, it is a time for us to look to the future with all the mysteries that the future holds, and I'm predicting there will be many. Sir Whitaker Gardner noted yesterday the significance of the 1984 hui taumata and how that hui set the agenda for the years to follow. It should be our expectation that this hui also sets a new agenda for us all. The topic that Justice Joe Williams had been given was balancing the nation, considering the constitutional leadership, the organisational arrangements that will best contribute to Māori advancement in the future. Because I am a very late, like just being told this morning that I would be giving this presentation, a very late ringin', I'm going to talk about what I want to talk about. So I think we should start with retitling this presentation. Because titles are important. And I want to retitle this discussion as Rebalancing the Nation. And I want to frame my kōrero in terms of the treaty. The treaty that set a pathway. For in 1840, the treaty set out a pathway. Some parts of it were still to be worked through, but it was a pathway for a balanced nation. The terms of the treaty were for a relationship, and it was a relationship of balance. Not a relationship of subjection, not a relationship of imposition. In looking to rebalance the nation, we are looking to perfect the relationship and the promises as set down in the treaty. We have heard of many of the efforts that have been made since 1984 and before, and the continuing efforts to position Māori. All these efforts, I think, can be framed in terms of steps along the pathway and advancement towards tino rangatiratanga. The steps towards correcting the imbalance of 7 February 1840. Rebalancing the nation, restating our position, ensuring our Māori house or Māori houses are strong, are stable, and are lasting. So let us pat ourselves on the back and celebrate the achievements made, but take time to think about the opportunities lost, and I'll come back to that soon. What I'm going to say has already been said in a number of different ways yesterday and today. But this is the key point for me, that unless it is accepted that Aotearoa has two founding cultures, not one, unless Māori culture and identity are valued in everything government, everything of our nation, and everything of our society says and does, unless we become and are part of the very centre of the way we do things in this country, nothing will change. The solution to rebalancing the nation constitutionally is simple. We need to have the promises of the treaty relationship delivered on. Well, koe rā aku kōrero. Thank you, I'm finished. No, I've provided a solution. Kia ora papa, tāmiti mo ena pakipaki. But I have provided a solution. Now it is for you to find our way to that solution. And please have it completed by 2040. If Justice Joseph Williams was here, I'm sure he would talk about us Māori and us Aotearoa being at the crossroads. The Waitangi Tribunal Y262 report spoke about Aotearoa being poised at a crossroads, both in terms of race relations and on our long quest for a mature sense of national identity. And I want to add to that that we are also at the crossroads in terms of our constitutional pathway forward. The issues are not just important in themselves, they impact on wider questions of so much of what we have discussed in the last 2 days. They impact on wider questions of economic growth and social cohesion. And I think Pākehā are sitting at the crossroads, waiting and wondering where to go next. Māori, we are at the crossroads. We are full of energy. We are full of motivation. We are full of past successes. We are looking to build on the efforts and opportunities of the past. We are excited. But we too are wondering, where do we go? So the big question that we have is, where are we going? And over the last 2 days, I've been waiting for the answer. Yesterday, Sir Tipene said something along the lines of, 2040 or a date like that is great, but if we don't know where we are going, who cares? Hopefully all of us will arrive at 2040. There is no question of that. But how will we arrive? What pathway will we have journeyed in getting to 2040? Will we turn up in a flash Mercedes-Benz, a little Mini, or one of those tractors Sir Witta Gardner spoke about yesterday? I agree with what Matanuku Mahuika said this morning in that we need to dream, and we need to dream big. As Jamie Tuta said, imagine the possibilities. Charles Royal yesterday spoke, well, I think he spoke, about the exact same thing, imagining our futures. We need to have a vision or visions. They must be new visions. Visions to take us through the crossroads and on a path. Not just a path to 2040, but a path or paths that will be determined by ourselves, a path of no hindrance, a path of potential, of hope and faith. And a path where the potential of the treaty relationship after grievances can be realised. I want to tell you a story about a vision, a person who was visionary and was a dreamer. And it's something it sort of builds nicely upon what Hinerangi has just spoken about in terms of Te Wānanga o Aotearoa. I was fortunate to be involved with the Wānanga and to be involved with Rongo Wetere, who, like his cousin Koro Wetere, who was honoured last night, was a visionary man. Is still a visionary man. I'm not a person of vision. If I had vision, I would have stayed home this morning and not come here. Then I would not have got to speak. Anyway, we were organising a conference and a group of us gathered to decide who would be the keynote speakers. Because of the international status of the conference, we wanted nothing but the best. We all went away and did our research and came back to another meeting and we put all our names forward. I suggested Sir Mason Drury, Professor Linda Smith, Professor Mick Dobson from Australia. I suggested most of you in this room. We didn't suggest Joe Williams because we knew he wouldn't show up. But Rongo Wetere looked at us a little bemused. So I asked Rongo, I said, Rongo, you know, what's wrong with our list and who do you have on your list? He said, I only have three names. Nelson Mandela, Bill Clinton, and the Pope. We met him halfway with an indigenous astronaut. But I think it shows that his vision and his dreams were far more stretching and far further than what we were thinking of. So let us not be limited in our thinking or limited in our potential to dream, to create a path, a future or futures that our tūpuna, our grandparents, could not imagine, could not foresee, and could not predict. I do want to reflect and reminisce briefly on the days gone by and then think of the changes we as individuals, whānau and society, have experienced. 25 years ago, it was 1989. I wasn't at Hui Taumata. But 25 years ago in 1989, Aotearoa population was only 3 million. So Paul Rees was the Governor General. Poie was the New Zealand hit. Julian Wilcox said that last night. No one had heard of the Foreshore and Seabed Act, let alone the Marine Act. No one had heard of sea lords, let alone tree lords. We are yet to see any settlements. There was no such thing as texting, Facebook, Twitter. Julian Wilcox had yet to read a thesaurus. The national anthem was only sung in English. Hon mai te pakipaki. That stood for give me a clap, not Friday night entertainment. But Māori have undergone dramatic changes in the last 50 to 60 years. There are people more expert than me, like Dr. Tahu Kukutai, who know the statistics better than I do. But I do want to pick out a few of those statistics that tell us what Māori have been through in the last 60 years. We as Māori have moved from the country to the city. Today, 84% of us live in cities. Māori have increased population size rapidly and become a much larger proportion of the New Zealand population. In 1951, we were 5%. Today, we are around 15%. Māori have intermarried with non-Māori New Zealanders. 56% of Māori children have a non-Māori parent. And half of all Māori identify with more than one ethnic group. We have diversified occupational structures from agriculture, seasonal work to urban unskilled and skilled work in manufacturing, service and other industries. Sadly, many of our people have decreased tribal links with the move to the cities. We have increased political power, participation and influence, and we have capitalized tribal political structures through treaty settlements. So what about the next 50 years? Dr. Tahu Kukutai and others have said that in the next 50 years, we will see a population increase. And Sir Tipene O'Regan presented those figures yesterday. So that Māori will rise just to 20% of the New Zealand population by 2051. That is compared with the trebling of the Māori population over the last 50 years. By comparison, the Asian and Pacific groups will increase by 120% and 58% respectively in the next 15 years. We will have increased political impact. We will have increased political impact generally as Māori become a larger portion of the voting population and specifically as the Māori political impact within political parties and as political parties increases, we hope. We will also see increasing tension between a bicultural view and a multicultural view of New Zealand. Because of the blurring of boundaries between Māori and other groups and the impact of other segments of the New Zealand population, importantly for my discussion, this tension will be focused if constitutional change attempts to enshrine the bicultural viewpoint emerge. So why do I think this information is important? These statistics give us an insight into the Māori society or Māori societies that we will deal with in the next 20 to 30 years and beyond. We are already dealing with a Māori society so different from the Māori society of 10 years ago. In the years ahead, Māori will continue to experience change. But that change won't be as dramatic as the changes of the past 60 years. Demographic and economical change will be less profound, but probably more exciting. Some of the major changes of the last 50 years will still be working themselves out. Māori as a group will be wealthier, both absolutely and relative to the rest of the population than in the last 50 years. Older people will no longer be a comparative rarity. The numbers are on the rise. And this, as a result, there may be greater competition for leadership status. Māori will be more diverse socially, economically, and politically, making it increasingly difficult to talk about Māori as a single entity. Māori will have fewer common experiences than in the last 50 years because of housing patterns, a broader occupation, an income range, changing education, and intermarriage. The most significant changes of the past 60 years have been Māori-driven and Māori-led, not due to government-specific policies. The most positive changes ahead for Māori must continue to be Māori-led. Māori must be the drivers of positive change. And this is where I want to talk about Hone the bus driver. And some of you may have heard this story before. Hopefully not all of you. You see, Hone is a bus driver. He drives a tourist bus. He is of Ngāti Makino. He loads up his bus with tourists from all over the world, and each day he drives them around the sights of the beautiful Bay of Plenty. And as Hone drives his bus of tourists around, he tells them of the slain that colonial troops got at that pass site. He recounts how a small band of only 10 Māori, well actually 10 Ngāti Makino, defeated 300 strong colonial troops on that pass site. He tells of how 20 Māori men and women outsmarted top British commanders to escape certain death. And he tells of how Māori fortresses were impenetrable by British soldiers. His recounts of history are numerous, and they are positively Māori, and they are positively Ngāti Makino. But one day on this tour, an English history professor, listening to Hone's recounts, questioned Hone. And he said, "Excuse me, driver, I thought Māori were actually beaten at this battle site." To which Hone confidently and quietly replied, "Not while I'm driving this bus." You see, Hone is one of our modern day leaders. On a daily basis, he has the opportunity, like so many of us, to influence people's thinkings. And he is driving the bus, he is in control, he is leading. We need more Hones and more Hines. In my work, I see so many potential Hone and Hines, people who can take control and have regular incidents to influence thinking. Our days of not even being on the bus are gone, and we've seen that. Our days of Māori being on the back seat of the bus are over. We don't even want to be those sitting in the second row of the bus. We want not only to drive the bus, but we want to own the bus. And we are doing that. But even more important than owning and driving the bus is that when we are driving the bus, we want our people on the bus. It is pointless for a positive Māori future to have Māori owning and driving empty buses. The point is, we must take our people with us. And I think this is one of the keys for our Māori futures. We already see the haves and the have-nots. Those who own the buses, those that are being questioned as to how they are caring for those sitting on the side of the road waiting for that bus to pick them up. The future for many Māori is positive. Increased life expectations. There is an increase in the number of Māori with tertiary qualifications. Māori incomes are increasing. But sadly, for many of our people, the future does not look so bright. While crime statistics are predicted to continue to fall, and that's questionable, Māori rates of incarceration are predicted to increase. The gap between the incomes of Māori rich, and yes, there are Māori rich, and the incomes of the Māori poor is predicted to increase. And the issue of poverty and all its associated demons will continue to inflict many of our society and many of our Māori communities. It will be some time before the positive Māori initiatives will have positive effect on the tiring battle against poverty. Importantly, there is hope for a brighter collective Māori future. Probably Māori futures. I am guessing that in 1984, the discussions were about a Māori future. Today, I think we will all talk about Māori futures. Future drivers, currently the biggest drivers reinforcing Māori culture and political identity, in my view, are the treaty settlements, processes, and the impact of Māori in national politics. These drivers provide us as Māori with opportunities to make positive change. The most significant impact from the treaty settlements process is not economic. In my view, the most significant impact is political. Treaty settlements, like our other resources, like Māori land, will not deliver our other collectively owned resources, like Māori land, will not deliver individual wealth. They can't. But they must deliver collective wealth. Iwi will have more of an economic base, but more importantly, income to play a part in regional politics and, to a lesser extent, national politics. And we are already seeing this. When this is connected with the increasing political impact of Māori within Māori political parties, as Māori political parties, and the MPs representing Māori seats in Parliament, this, in my view, will institutionalise Māori within local and national government. The political impact, centering Māori within that political framework or adopting a new political framework, will assist, it may even resolve, the imbalancing of our nation. Most Māori now live outside the boundaries of their traditional kin group and have done so for two or perhaps three generations. While allegiances to general Māori culture are strong, it is very hard for many Māori to maintain meaningful links to specific iwi and hapū groups. This is interesting given Māori today seem to be more Māori in a cultural sense and more positive about their identity than the generation immediately preceding us. The trend will continue. The trends show us that this Māori generation, that's us, you, is more Māori than the last. The next generation will be more Māori again, not biologically, but culturally and linguistically. The increased willingness to identify as Māori has been driven by a number of things, increasing pride in culture and language, the absence of any social stigma attached to identification with Māori ancestry, and incentives to identify as Māori provided by the settlement of historic treaty claims. What this all says to me is that our Māori society of tomorrow will be varied at the extremes. More Māori in a cultural sense, yet less iwi and hapū focused in a traditional sense. More Māori will have higher incomes, yet more Māori will live in economic poverty. The variances within Māori society will make it more complex and more challenging to deal with. We will deal with Māori societies, not one Māori society, and we probably already do that anyway. But for constitutional rebalancing of this nation, we will need to work against, we will need to continue to challenge, and we will even need to work with our treaty partner. And within the mix, the ideal must surely be that Māori are advancing culturally, socially, educationally, and commercially. And we have heard that time and time again yesterday and today. Māori making progress over time. And this advancement is happening independent of government intrusion. There needs to be the space where we have a vision or visions, where we ourselves have the answers and we are the answer. But to have the promise of the treaty relationship delivered on, we must build into our national institutions that treaty relationship. The treaty was never about grievances or settlements. It was about relationships, a future partnership. The treaty must provide the centre of gravity around which our multicultural nation can coalesce. It is the precondition for unlocking future Māori potential for the benefit of the country as a whole. This treaty relationship is the core of our constitutional national identity, and it is unique. There must be a long-term plan, the goal, the ideal. I want to finish with a kōrero about opportunities. And Sarah Jane spoke about it, the saying from Tawhiao, and yesterday Parekawhi McLean also spoke, quoted the tongi. For the opportunities do not come easy, and they will not be realised overnight. To work to rebalance the nation, some would say that imbalance, which started on 7 February 1840, will be a long journey. And as we know, things take time. Unfortunately, more time and more hard work will be needed. I want to end with my version of a kōrero that, as I say, we've heard yesterday and today. And it's taken from who I think retells it most poetically, Justice Joe Williams. I'm not sure if it's relevant to my kōrero, but anyway, I like this kōrero. It is a particular kōrero of the second Māori King Tawhiao. He had waged a war against imperial forces between 1860 and 1865. He had fought to a standstill. While the results of the war were inconclusive, he lost the politics. His villages were destroyed, his people scattered, and he retreated into the centre of the North Island where British authority did not reach. Over 1 million acres of his traditional homeland was confiscated in punishment for the so-called rebellion. In the 1830s and 1880s, a new movement arose in Parihaka, a region that had suffered even greater confiscation because of opposition to the land-hungry settler government. The leaders of the village were the prophets Te Whiti o Rongomai and Tohu Kākahi. As Parihaka reached the zenith of its political power, Tawhiao, now a fugitive, travelled there to meet with Te Whiti and Tohu. They invited him to join their movement, and his reply is still remembered to this day. It was as one of the most poignant descriptions of the plan he and his people had of the pain he and his people had suffered through years of war and dispossession. He said, "E Whiti, e Tohu, rapua te mea ngaro. E hoki ake nei au ki te rua Waikato, he roimata taku kai I te ao I te pō. Whiti, Tohu, I bequeath to you the search for that which has been lost. As for me, I will return to the valley of my birth, and I will eat my tears from sunrise to sunrise." It is impossible to forget such stories, but we must be conscious of the realities in which we operate, just as Tawhiao was, for even in his despair, he planned for the return of his people. He said to Te Whiti and Tohu, "Māku anō hei hanga I toku nei whare, ko ngā paupau he mahoi he patete, ko te tāhuhu he hinau, me whakatupu ki te hu o te rengarenga, me whakapakari ki te hu o te kawariki. And I will build my own house, and its pillars will be made of the humble soft woods mahoi and patete, the ridge beam hinau. It shall grow and blossom like that of the rengarenga and be strong and flourish like the sour fruit of the kawariki." Using the architect of the traditional carved meeting house as his metaphor, his message to the prophets of Parihaka was that his first task was to be the shelter in which his people could survive and heal themselves. He was a tough realist, and he knew the years to come would be hard, but he foresaw that his people would rise again. And they have. They would take the opportunities before them. They would rebuild, restore, replenish, and revitalize their communities. And in time, they would rebalance the nation. Let us all ensure that we make the most of the opportunities of the past. We must build on the past work of the many. But let us also ensure we make the most of the opportunities before us, so that we may rebalance the nation, our nation, our Aotearoa. Nō reira, tēnā tātou katoa.